Hey everyone, welcome to God's Plan, Your Part, Year 2, where this year we're reading through and studying the entire New Testament, one chapter at a time. Thanks again for joining us in discovering God's plan and your part in it.
Hey, welcome back. Today we are looking at John chapter 13, probably most famously known for Jesus washing the disciples' feet. But there's also a lot in this passage about Judas rejecting Jesus ultimately, and then also Peter rejecting Jesus. I think it's interesting to compare those two men and how they handled their rejection of Jesus and what comes out of that. So as we look over John chapter 13, Jenny, what do you want to talk about?
Well, there's a couple things that I think, like you're saying, were like sticking out to me. A lot of the things that Jesus specifically says are some things that stuck out to me with the foot washing, as well as with Judas actually betraying Jesus. And then finally, a little bit of connection too with Peter, who will deny Jesus as well. So there's some language that stuck out to me.
All right, let's deal with this foot washing situation first. Jesus basically, like, they're having dinner. Jesus starts to take off his robes, essentially his outer garments, and washes the feet of the disciples. This is an incredible example of humility, of service. He even encourages the disciples to be like, hey, you're no greater than your master. You serve me who comes from God. And he commands them to continue to do this. So some churches today actually do foot washing. I grew up in a church that regularly practiced foot washing. And actually, when I was younger, I thought it was really weird because it is kind of weird. And now I'm actually like really fond of it, actually. Like when I think back over some of the interactions I've had washing feet, as weird as that is, there were some really meaningful conversations, really meaningful connections, particularly as I think of, like, so I grew up Mennonite, and we would split the men and the women. So the men would, like, go to the gym and wash feet, and the women would stay in the auditorium or whatever. But a lot of times there would be, like, older men who I would not normally interact with, who I'd be sitting at a circle with, and I would wash their feet and they would wash mine. There's not a lot of instances in the church community anymore where older men are investing in younger men. Don't take this any kind of weird way or think that it's strange or anything like that. Like, I'm just noticing, particularly as I'm working in men's ministry today, there's just not many places in the church anymore for younger guys to get connected with older guys, and they all want it, but it's not happening. So foot washing is not necessarily for that. Foot washing is to encourage service and humility. And I do think that that is one of the fruits of it. And I do think we miss out on something when we assume this is just symbolism, which I'm not going to pick a fight with you if you assume it's just symbolism. That's fine. But I think it is actually a powerful thing to practice.
I was just going to say, too, I think something that can be overshadowed easily is the fact that this is meant to be an act of humility, of service for other people. And it's not like some weird, odd, creepy thing. I actually grew up, I didn't grow up Mennonite, but I was in a Brethren in Christ church, which is very close, I guess you could say, to Mennonite as well. And I remember the same thing, like those like odd feeling interactions, but at the same time, like looking back, it's like, wow, that's actually a really cool example. And what I think stuck out to me in this story was what Jesus actually said. If you look at chapter 13, verse 12, or excuse me, verse 14, it says, "If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do just as I have done to you." So I think it can be so easily missed and can be thought of as this like really odd thing. But Jesus is literally saying to them, this is the example I'm giving to you in like this actual physical way, but also like I would say even that figurative way as well. Like, I am doing this, showing humility that I am willing to take care of you, even though I am greater than you, even though I'm your teacher, I'm still willing to humble myself to serve you.
It is interesting that at the Last Supper, when he breaks the bread and pours the wine and says, this is my body and this is my blood, he says, do this in remembrance of me. And we do that today in remembrance of him. Like, he's establishing communion. Paul later doubles down on communion. And when Jesus says, do this in remembrance of me, the church takes it literally, like we should continue to do this. And there's all kind of theological interpretations of what's being taught there and how it's handled. But it is interesting that when he's essentially saying the same thing about foot washing, we don't take it to mean the same thing, particularly probably because it's so awkward. Like, it's not weird to pass bread and grape juice down through the aisles. But if you were to stop your service and actually encourage everybody to wash each other's feet, it would be pretty weird. And it is interesting. It's really hard to wash people's feet and be arrogant at the same time. Yeah. It is actually like a universally humbling thing. I should point out like the context. Obviously, they didn't have cars or trucks or anything like that. They would walk around in the streets all the time. And it was customary for like the master of the house or the master of the ceremony or the master of the dinner to have servants arranged to wash the feet of the guests. So it was a way that the master would honor the guests. And so Jesus here is taking on the role of basically a bondservant, a slave. Like, he is crossing significant cultural, socioeconomic boundaries to wash the disciples' feet. That's why they react as strongly as they do, because this is a pretty radical, humble act. And again, I think it is a good thing to continue to do, even though it's weird. It was just as weird for them, by the way. Like, Peter was like, I don't like this. And Jesus was like, well, too bad you're doing it.
Well, and especially if it continued, I'm not sure the text totally says that. Did they continue to wash each other's feet?
Well,
who knows?
I mean, certainly because many denominations still do, there is a thread of this happening through history.
I just mean like in this exact moment in this story, do you think they continued around the circle? And if they did, how awkward it must have been for someone like Judas, who we'll get to next in the next part of the chapter for today, who ends up betraying Jesus in that actual moment of the dinner together.
Okay, so let's just get right to it. Judas obviously betrays Jesus. If you've been reading with us or listening with us, we've been, you know, we've hit that part of the story probably three times so far. So it's pretty well established that he's going to betray Jesus.
Well, and something that stuck out to me again, I was telling you, dialogue really was what got my attention this time. Verse 27, Jesus is asked by one of the disciples, like, because Jesus tells them straight up, like, somebody in this room is going to betray me. And they're like, it must
have
gotten
big deal.
Pretty awkward. Yeah. So one of them leans over and says, so who's it going to be? And Jesus just says, whoever I pass this morsel of bread to is going to be the one that does. And so after he says that, in verse 27, it says, after he had taken the morsel, that means Judas, Satan entered into him. Which, first of all, like, that was just so odd to me. Like, oh my goodness. It's like Jesus knew the scenario. But even more so after that is that Jesus said to him, what you are going to do, do quickly. Mm-hmm. So in my mind is like, is Jesus talking to Judas at that point? Or is he seriously, or is he talking to Satan? Because, like, Satan is present in Judas's thoughts. He's been, like, given permission to, I don't know, like, move in his heart. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it's Satan that is the one that's at work in this entire thing. So, I don't know. It was weird to me.
So, the big question here, Satan is actually mentioned twice in the chapter. Once in, I think it's verse 2, during supper when the devil had already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. And then again in verse, you already talked about verse 27, Satan entered into him. It is interesting and at the same time odd that one of Jesus' disciples here is described as being led by Satan and later, like, indwelt essentially by Satan. How is that possible? And what a shocking thing that Jesus has been hiking around with this guy for 3 years, most likely. And here he is, like, ending up being indwelt by Satan. And he does, like, he takes Satan's purposes and Satan's plans and runs with them. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is it's also God's plans and runs with them. So it's really, really interesting what is going on here with Judas. And there's some pretty deep questions to wrestle with related to Judas, I think.
So what are the deep questions that you're thinking of?
Well, so the first one is, like, if this guy is a disciple of Jesus, and he is on the surface, how is it that he can follow Jesus for 3 years and essentially, like, be known as one of his disciples and then basically just be a fake? Like, Jesus had no effect on him at all. The next question is, like, okay, this guy has been following Jesus, listening to Jesus, hearing him teach. Like, what is his eternal destination? Like, is this a mistake that he made? Is this something that Satan did through him and so he can't take responsibility for it? Like, how do we handle this? And it is actually important that you dig into this story for yourself and that you understand what's going on here, because depending on how you see this story could actually have larger implications in your life.
So what are the answers to all those questions?
This feels like a total setup, huh? It's
no,
definitely
it's
not.
I'm not asking you to do that either. I feel bad.
The big thing here is that I don't think, and I think historically this is pretty much how Judas is understood, he was never obedient to Jesus in the first place. He never believed in Jesus. He never had faith in Jesus. You can see little glimpses of this when he seems to be like pretty selfish. He seems to be like pretty untrustworthy with the money. I think the bigger picture impacts from this story are that there are a lot of people, and actually Jesus teaches this himself, there are a lot of people who claim to follow Jesus who are not. And they will ultimately reject Jesus because they are following Jesus like to, I don't know, like have a better reputation or to be like a spy or something, like an infiltrator. It is possible to follow Jesus for a long length of time and still not be obedient to Jesus. And if you are, if you're just like following Jesus on the surface, like to look like you are, you're in a really dangerous place, honestly. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Not only for yourself, but I don't know, seems like also for others too. Because I feel like even for some of those other disciples, that would have been like so discouraging.
Oh, yeah.
Like to find that out, like, oh my goodness, like, am I an actual disciple? Are you guys over here? Like, I don't know. I think it would just cause a lot of insecurity. But that being said, there is some insecurity that we're going to see as we continue to read through these chapters. But at the end of 13, we see the denial of Peter, or at least the beginning conversations of what will happen with Peter. And the dialogue that stuck out for this was Peter's basically saying, wherever you're going, God, or Jesus, I'm going with you. And when he says that, Jesus is like, well, first of all, you can't. Mm-hmm. And second of all, verse 38, will you lay down your life for me? Truly, truly, I say to you, the rooster will not crow till you have denied me three times. So he's calling him out already. Like, I guess kind of like seeing his excited, motivated heart, but knows for sure the reality of the situation, what's going to happen.
I think this chapter is really interesting because I had never paired up Peter's denial essentially with Judas's denial. And both of them are guilty of the same thing. Like, Judas is denying that Jesus is the Christ because he's going to hand him over to the high priest and have him put to death. Peter is going to deny that Jesus is the Christ because he's afraid for his own life. What you can do with both of them is like drill into how they handle this denial. And what's interesting about Peter is that he comes to a place of repentance and his life bears incredible fruit. Judas comes to a place of regret, but he never repents. Mm-hmm. And he takes his own life essentially because he feels so guilty for what he has done, but he does not reconcile his relationship with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I think even that has pretty big picture implications for us. Like, don't read this story and think like, well, they never had a chance. It seems like they all had a chance. What's interesting is what you do with that chance. Like, if you come to a place where you have rejected Christ, you need to repent and you need to turn from that and you need to continue to follow Christ. If you do that, he will embrace you as a disciple. But if you just continue to cover up your own sin, cover up your own pride, your own arrogance, you're not a follower of Jesus. You're not a disciple of Jesus. Ultimately, you are a son of Satan. That's kind of like, right? I wish you could see Jenny's face right now. That's what the text says. The text says that he was handed over to Satan because he was a fertile place for Satan to do his work. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when you refuse to authentically follow Jesus and commit your life to him, you are the same. It reminds me of the story of that demon that like gets cast out.
I was thinking that
and you like clean up
it.
The house. So you clean up the house, but the demon brings back seven other ones. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The problem is that you've never become fully obedient to Christ. And right. So you're actually just like a nice looking house, a nice looking place for mm-hmm. more demons to be. Mm-hmm. None of us should desire to be that. And we should be vigilant of these things. Ultimately, I don't think that you can lose your relationship with Jesus. I don't think that you can lose your salvation. But I think a lot of people pretend to have salvation when they have never actually held on to it.
Mm. So as we're looking at this chapter, it seems like the your part for today, I don't know. Do you think, I think it kind of resonates mostly with the first part of the chapter where it's like Jesus setting this example and setting this tone for servanthood. And I think that can be a really good your part for us as believers today. Although foot washing seems like this odd thing to do, it is a extreme example that Jesus tells us to follow, not only in the physical way, but also in, I think, like the meaning of what foot washing is. And that's like serving one another mm-hmm. in the most humble way possible, so much so that Jesus laid down his life for us. So look for opportunities today in your own family life, your work life, relationships with your friends, where you can actively, humbly, offer yourself to others around you for the glory of God. Thanks for joining us for chapter 13. We'll be back again tomorrow with John chapter 14. Thanks for joining today's episode of God's Plan, Your Part. As always, please consider partnering with us as we are a listener-supported podcast that we hope to continue to grow with support from listeners just like you.
We've made it super easy to partner with us, and you can support us by following the link in our show notes or our description. You can support us with as little as $3 a month.
Every little bit of this helps so much, and we're so thankful for your support. With that in mind, here's today's reading. John chapter 13. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus knew that the Father had given all these things into his hands, and that he had come from God, and he was going back to God, and rose from supper. He laid aside the outer garments and, taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" Jesus answered him, "What I am doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand." Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "The one who has bathed does not need to wash, except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not every one of you." For he knew who was about to betray him. That was why he said, "Not all of you are clean." When he had washed their feet, and put on his outer garments, and resumed his place, he said to them, "Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example, that you should also do, just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. I am not speaking of all of you. I know whom I have chosen, but the scripture will be fulfilled. He who ate my bread has lifted his angel against me. I am telling you this now, before it takes place, that when it does take place, you may believe that I am he. Truly, truly, I say to you, whoever receives the one I send receives me. And whoever receives me receives the one who sent me." After saying these things, Jesus was troubled in his spirit and testified, "Truly, truly, I say to you, one of you will betray me." The disciples looked at one another, uncertain of whom he spoke. One of the disciples who Jesus loved was reclining at the table at Jesus' side. So Simon Peter motioned to him to ask Jesus of whom he was speaking. So that disciple, leaning back against Jesus, said to him, "Lord, who is it?" Jesus answered, "It is he to whom I will give this morsel of bread when I have dipped it." So when he had dipped the morsel, he gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. Then after he had taken the morsel, Satan entered into him. Jesus said to him, "What you are going to do, do quickly." Now no one at the table knew why he had said this to him. Some thought that because Judas had the money bag, Jesus was telling him, "Buy what we need for the feast," or that he should give something to the poor. So after receiving the morsel of bread, he immediately went out, and it was night. When he had gone out, Jesus said, "Now is the Son of Man glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself and glorify him at once. Little children, yet a little while I am with you. You will seek me, and just as I said to the Jews, so now I say also to you, where I am going, you cannot come. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, just as I have loved you. You also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus answered him, "Where I am going, you cannot follow me now, but you will follow me afterward." Peter said to him, "Lord, why can I not follow you now? I will lay down my life for you." Jesus answered, "Will you lay down your life for me? Truly, truly, I say to you, the rooster will not crow until you have denied me 3 times.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of God's Plan, Your Part. Don't forget, you can find us on just about every social media platform and YouTube. Let us know what you thought of today's episode, and if you have any questions, go ahead and post them there. You can also reach out to us directly at godsplanyourpart@gmail.com. As always, if you don't have a Bible, or if you'd like to use the one that we use, reach out to us via email and we'll be happy to send one to you. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you again tomorrow.